Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast. I'm Ian Welsh, and with me today, once again, is Joe Francis, Vice President, Sustainability, Coca-Cola European Partners. Welcome back to the podcast, Joe.
Hey, Ian, how are you doing?
Very well. We've just been on a conference session at the Innovation Forum's Future of Plastics event. So let's pick up some of the things that came out of that session. Why don't you start off, Joe, by outlining the targets that you've set as a business around plastics, why you've set them, and the barriers to achieving them.
Let me first of all just say a little bit about the global Coca-Cola World Without Waste strategy, which is very much looking at a 2030 horizon, focused very much on all of the things that I'll talk about in Western Europe. There is a bit of a distinction, certainly at the global level, looking at a 2030 horizon, and the targets that I'll talk about within Europe, we're probably a bit ahead of that. So probably our most ambitious target, which is around ensuring that 100% of the packaging that we put onto the market, or putting it another way, collecting a bottle or a can for everyone we sell, that all of that material comes back. That's that 100% collection goal. We're aiming to get to that by 2025. So that's probably 5 years ahead of the global target. We think that today we're somewhere at around about 75, 77% of our packaging coming back. And we're very fortunate in our business that about 85% of what we put onto the market is bottles and cans, either refillable bottles or plastic bottles or glass bottles, all of which fully, entirely recyclable. About another 10% is dispensed, so no packaging at all. So the vast majority of what we put onto the market is recyclable. It can come back, can be collected. The challenge is probably one of infrastructure, which in many markets doesn't quite exist in the same way as markets that have, for example, deposit return schemes. That's our first big target. Our second big target is around ensuring that by 2023, so 3 years out, we can be in a place where half of all of the plastic we use is recycled plastic. Ultimately, looking further ahead, aiming to eliminate the use of virgin all-based PET entirely. And one of the things I said earlier at the event was that if we were successful at doing that, it would enable us to remove somewhere in the region of 200,000 tons of virgin all-based PET. And that kind of gives you a glimpse of the size and the scale of the challenge. Today, about a third of the plastic we use is recycled PET. So we're using somewhere in the region of 60,000 to 70,000 tons today. We're on track for 50%, but it's not a linear path. So in some markets, for example, Norway or Sweden and the Netherlands, we're either already at or will very soon be at 100%. Other markets like GB, where the infrastructure for getting that material back is a little trickier, we're somewhere in the region of 50%. And then we've also got a number of our brands that have already moved to 100% recycled PET. And so those two goals, 100% collection and 50% recycled PET, they work interdependently. The biggest barrier, you asked me about the challenges, the biggest barrier, certainly when you think about recycled PET, is a barrier really around feedstock. It's about feedstock quality. It's about the fact that the demand now exceeds supply. And it's a fact that in many of our markets, we just don't see the type of quality coming back through collection schemes that we really need to satisfy our demand. There's another challenge, which I thought I'd make, which is one of technology. Certainly, we've been relying for many years on traditional mechanical recyclings, where you collect material, you flake it, you shred it, you clean it, and then you reform it into new plastic that can be used again for plastic bottles. We are going to need to see a significant scale up of new technologies like enhanced recycling that allows us to take hard to recycle plastics and then turn that plastic into food grade recycled PET. And we've done a few things recently. We've invested in something called Cure, which is technology that's been created by the Morsenkopf Group, which again gives a new lease of life for difficult to recycle plastic waste. The Coca-Cola company has been working with Ionica to help them reach a scale up for a new closed loop recycling technology. And so that technology challenge, I think, is going to be really key. You asked me also why we're setting the targets. And I wanted just to very briefly touch on that. First of all, really important, we really do understand the size and the scale of the problem around plastic pollution. And at the same time, recognize that we've got a responsibility to help fix that. We're also looking very firmly at the challenge around circularity, circular economy, which we discussed quite a lot at the conference, where we're absolutely convinced that we've got to get to a place where all of our packaging is collected, it doesn't end up as litter, waste, oceans, and that material can be used. But we're also thinking about climate, Ian, because when we look at our value chain carbon footprint, 40% is related to our packaging, and we will not be able to transition to become a low carbon business unless we reduce the carbon footprint of our packaging.
Let's think a bit back to feedstock. Price issues must be a major challenge for you. I mean, right now, the price of virgin oil-based feedstock is low. It's very low, particularly compared to when using recycled feedstock. So how do you deal with the internal arguments around, well, look, economically, it makes more sense to go back to virgin oil-based feedstock rather than using recycled content?
You're absolutely right. And recycled PET is at a significant premium at the moment. We've seen virgin PET prices certainly fall. I mean, actually, there used to be a correlation between recycled PET and virgin PET pricing. And actually, we see them now mainly moving almost independently of each other. If your strategy is based on a strategy around circularity, you've got to put your money where your mouth is. For us, when we're thinking about a world without waste, or we're thinking about collecting 100% of our packaging, you can't just invest in the collection piece. You've got to then invest in what happens to that material. And so in that sense, using the euros or the pounds that we've got to make sure that we're investing in recycled PET to bring it back, to put it back into our bottles, is demonstrating that we can truly get close to a circular economy. If you think about markets like Norway or Sweden or Germany that really do have, certainly in the Nordics, well-designed, well-functioning deposit return schemes, they are truly circular. But they're only truly circular if you're then using that material and putting it back into the marketplace. That's why we've chosen in Norway and Sweden, we've chosen those markets to be the first markets where we move to a place where every single one of our plastic bottles will be 100% recycled PET. So you've got that true circularity. And that's why we're investing. Yes, it does cost us money. And yes, we believe it's the right thing to do. But again, over time, we do believe that that differential will come down. Because over time, if we are successful in getting to a place where deposit return schemes are in place across all of our markets, we will have much greater volume of high quality feedstock. And that's why we think of deposit return schemes as not just kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity to transform this, but they actually then deliver a future fit supply chain for food grade recycled PET that can be used again and again in our bottles. And that's why we're so involved in those discussions.
Coca-Cola has certainly thoroughly and firmly nailed its colours to the mast in terms of deposit return schemes. Now, I mean, I know there was some ambiguity in the past. There are, of course, a number of challenges. The principal one is raised is that if you take an example of the market like the UK, we have quite a relatively successful domestic curbside recycling now. And if you remove PET from that, a PET being typically one of the most valuable recyclates, then the economic viability of that curbside recycling diminishes. What's the best way to get around that?
We've seen many markets globally where deposit return schemes for beverage packaging coexist and sit alongside curbside or at-home recycling systems and schemes for other materials. So we truly believe that's the way forward. And look, the reality is, it referred to some ambiguity. In years gone by, maybe we didn't support deposit return schemes in the way we do now, and that's been the case. In years gone by, we were also putting our weight behind existing curbside schemes, EPR schemes. But the reality is that many of those schemes have stalled. Many of those schemes either do not work for beverage packaging. And in many markets, you know, I live and work in London, and although I'm out and about in the centre of London as much as I would like in the last few months, you continue to see plastic bottles littering the street. And it's very similar if you go into central Paris or some cities in Spain. And the reality is that curbside or at-home recycling is not delivering the same collection rates for beverage packaging that deposit return schemes deliver. And that's why we've thrown our weight behind deposit return schemes. Look, we've got very clear direction in Europe from the EU Single Plastic Directive. You have a very clear 90% collection target by 2029, 77% by 2025. We're hoping that we're going to be ahead of that with our 100% collection by 2025. We wanted to set that as the North Star. We've got a very strong roadmap. But look, it's tough, right? There are challenges around infrastructure. Politics is also slow. Whilst there was a raging discussion about the size and the shape of the deposit return scheme in Scotland, look, frankly, our political leaders have had a lot more important things to think about in the last 12 months than deposit return schemes. But at the same time, Scottish Government has signalled its intention to have that in place by the summer of 2022. So the discussions continue. But the nature of setting these schemes up is inherently slow. It's not the kind of thing we can do alone. A deposit return scheme for Coca-Cola packaging would not work. It's not the kind of thing. It's got to be national. It's got to be comprehensive. It's got to be simple to use for the consumer and simple to understand.
And I guess what it's doing is it is applying a sort of value, a hint of our sense of value into the plastic bottle that wasn't there before. And that, if you like, is almost a market-based solution to a problem that's, as you say, to get to the sort of levels of recycling that are necessary and that you and similar companies have committed to. Let's think about use of a different feedstock. We've had a session already at the conference around bioplastic materials. So is that part of your future use of virgin bioplastic materials rather than oil-based materials?
When you talk about bioplastics, I find it such a strange term because when people talk about bioplastics, they can mean one of two very different things. You can either mean plastics that come from biomaterials, and the Coca-Cola company was the very first company to kind of get into this market, pioneering plant bottle, bringing plant-based material that is fully recyclable and putting it into plastic. And you can recycle a plant bottle in exactly the same way you can recycle a normal PET bottle or a PET bottle made from recycled content. And many of our bottles today have both PET from plant-based sources as well as PET from recycled PET. But you can also, by the term bioplastic, mean biodegradable plastic. So that's why I find the term very confusing. On the biodegradable piece, in terms of biodegradability, in terms of plastic for beverage bottles, that's something we're not a fan of. We're not going to pursue that strategy. We're not going to pursue that strategy because we think it confuses the consumer. We think it also would contaminate the recycling stream. So if you put biodegradable material next to material that is recycled content, then it's going to completely confuse and contaminate the whole system. So we're not supporting biodegradable material for plastic bottles, but certainly bio-based material we'd be great fans of. But at the moment, let's be very clear, at the moment we're really focused on the circularity piece. I think we see a future where, going back to our goal, if we are to avoid this 200,000 tons of virgin all-based plastic, which is, and by the way, that's a kind of a figure for Western Europe, if we are to do that, then we see the future being recycled PET that comes through mechanical recycling, recycled PET that comes through chemical recycling, and then probably a portion of PET that comes through bioplastics, for example, plant bottle material. We see the world in the future as being, the world of plastic being probably those three sources, eliminating virgin all-based PET. That would be the aim.
Something that came up a lot in our session and was really a focus of the audience attending the session was the collaboration. I mean, the fact that we had representative of Coca-Cola and a representative of PepsiCo on the same session was great, and it indicates that there is a degree of recognition of the necessary collaboration. So how do you categorise the sense of collaboration you're feeling within the industry? I mean, you sense that you really can't solve all these problems on your own.
When you look at the size and the scale of the climate crisis that we're facing, or you look at the size and the scale of the challenge around plastic pollution, it's not something that Coca-Cola is going to be able to solve just by acting alone. So things like the Ellen MacArthur Foundation commitments, the plastic packs that we're seeing, even when you look at deposit return schemes, it's going to require big brands to work together, but also to work together with retailers. If you look at chemical recycling, it's going to require companies to come together to help scale up new solutions. If you look at alternatives to plastic, probably the best, one of the things that we're most excited about is the new TerraCycle Loop shopping platform. We've seen it with Carrefour in France. Now we've got it with Tesco in Great Britain. Again, that's a great example of collaboration because it brings many different brands together on one platform that gives an alternative that's far more circular for the consumer. So we're really optimistic around the collaboration piece. because these discussions are far, far bigger than even a company the size and the scale of Coca-Cola. So we're ready to collaborate, and that has to happen if we're going to solve the challenges.
The TerraCycle Loop project, of course, is consumers bringing their own packaging to the store and taking the product away and then bringing back their own packaging, or indeed having reusable packaging for the products.
It's very much about reusable packaging. It's not necessarily the consumer bringing their own pack. I mean, for example, in the TerraCycle Loop model, the consumer can go and purchase a 1 litre bottle of Coca-Cola or a 1 litre bottle of Coca-Cola Zero. But that bottle is a refillable glass bottle. They'll take it home, they'll enjoy it, they'll leave it in their Loop tote bag, it'll be collected, then it'll come back, it'll be washed and it'll be refilled, and then it'll go back out. In some markets, that's very, very familiar to people. But actually in a market like Great Britain, we've not had refillable glass in GB for maybe 20, 30 years. It's a little bit back to the future, but it's also very new. It looks great. In fact, we found out recently that Coca-Cola Zero is actually one of the highest selling SKUs in the Tesco Loop model. So we're quite proud of that. So consumers are really excited about it, and it's working well.
I remember well myself returning glass bottles for pocket money when I was a kid in Scotland. So it is a bit of, as you say, back to the future in some respects. Obviously, we've been talking about the kind of necessary drivers of getting your targets met by 2025 and 2030 and other deadlines. How important is the impact of consumers and also activists providing necessary pressure to keep you moving forward? Because as you say, the solutions aren't all there yet. So is it just the consumer pressure and activist pressure? Is that a help for you to drive forward and meet your targets?
I think it's always a help. I think from an activist perspective, we work with many NGOs. We have dialogue with many NGOs and activists, and we really welcome that. They do a phenomenal job at highlighting the size and the scale of the challenge. They do a phenomenal job at really pushing the business community, and we welcome that and we continue that dialogue. I think from a consumer perspective, I think there are some challenges. You know, one of the challenges we see is that sometimes the consumer preferred pack may not always be the most sustainable pack. It may not always be the pack with the lowest carbon footprint. I mean, if you ask consumers, consumers have a very strong preference for glass, but actually a one-way glass bottle probably has the highest carbon footprint of all packs. Many consumers will look at a plastic bottle and say, okay, maybe in a certain channel, I don't want that today. But the reality is that if that pack has high percentage of recycled content in it and does come back through a deposit return scheme, it actually delivers a very, very low carbon footprint when compared with many other pack types. And I think that, look, consumers just want to do the right thing. And that's absolutely right. We're all consumers. I also want to do the right thing when I'm buying a soft drink or any other product. So I expect companies that are providing products to be doing the right thing on my behalf. And that's exactly why we're thinking about things like recycled content in pack. We're putting it in, we're putting a message on pack to say that the pack's not just recyclable, but now that pack contains recycled content. Look, I think it will also take some time for consumers to understand the differences. 100% recyclability, 100% recycled content, 100% recycling, they all mean slightly different things. And it's no surprise that the consumer gets a little bit confused. We also know very clearly that they want companies like Coke to make the right choices on their behalf. And that's exactly why we are proactively investing in things like recycled PET and putting it back into our bottles.
I think you're right. It's all about the changing relationship between consumers and the brands that they trust. The whole plastic pollution debate took off was, again, a lot of it came back to the fact that consumers were seeing plastic pollution all around them. And that really was the driver for them, was this shouldn't be happening. And I guess that then is setting the challenge for brands like Coca-Cola to really try and meet that. And then, of course, Coca-Cola has to then take consumers with them, because if you want us to do that, here's what that means. So it's sort of interesting the way that the relationship between consumers and their brands is changing. Joe, as always, it's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks so much for joining me once again on the Innovation Forum podcast.
Pleasure. Thanks, Ian.